Greetings everyone and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Angelo Valdivia and with me this week are Oliver Brandt.
G'day folks.
Luke Henderson.
Howdy howdy.
And Michael Goncalves.
Hey team.
We've got a great episode lined up for you this week, all about the return of E3 as a digital-only event, like it has been for most of the world. Pac-Man wants a slice of the Battle Royale pie as Pac-Man 99 gets announced and released. Plus, we've got some thoughts on what other properties might work as a 99 Battle Royale experience. But let's kick things off with how huge Monster Hunter Rise's release has been so far. So since the release of the game on March 26, which as of this recording has been about 15 days or so, Monster Hunter Rise has reached 5 million sales worldwide, according to a Capcom press release, which is a pretty big deal. In comparison, Monster Hunter World also hit 5 million copies sold, but that was in its first weekend. But you also need to keep in mind that that was combined across PlayStation and Xbox. So two platforms, whereas Rise is only on the Switch. Release of Monster Hunter Rise also lifted Capcom's stock price from to 3,735 yen on the day of release, and it's currently sitting at an all-time high of 3,775 yen as of local close of business Friday, April 9, which is pretty significant for Capcom's financial history. But all that said, there is still another Monster Hunter game still to come this year. We've still got Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, which is the sequel to the RPG spin-off entry to the series, which is on track to release on Switch on July 9th, 2021. So what do you think about this kind of news, guys? Are we surprised that Monster Hunter Rise has done this well on just one platform?
No,
I'm not.
Yeah, it's... With Monster Hunter World, the series sort of just, like, massively hit, you know, the sort of gaming cultural zeitgeist. It wasn't, like, you know, as big as Animal Crossing, but, like, this was the biggest the series had ever been. Previously, it had been, like, sort of this niche hack and slash that, like, you know, weebs would play. But it sort of, like, it became, like, this big AAA thing. And because of that, it has... huge ramifications for the series going forward, and we see that with Rise. Like, so it's sold 5 million now, but it sold 4 million in the first weekend. So compared to Monster Hunter World's, 5 million, that's absolutely incredible when you consider that, like, at the time the PS4 had a larger user base than what the Switch currently has, and there's Xbox sales in there as well. The fact that it got anywhere close to that 5 million number is just absolutely incredible. And, you know, it's a good game that reviewed really well. I mean, I reviewed it really well. Luke reviewed it really well. it's not really surprising at all. But it will be interesting to see if they can keep sales going, because, you know, we had 4 million in that first weekend and then, you know, another million since. They really need to be able to keep those sales going. They need to be keeping people's interest. And I think the way that they do that is by continuing to release content.
Do we have our region specific numbers for this game?
Not yet.
Like, I'm assuming you went bonkers in Japan.
I think Japan is responsible for like 1.3 million sales.
Yeah, 1.3
million
sales was in Japan.
And it's been like number one since it released over there. I think number two is Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury.
It is also important to note that 5 million was last weekend, is when that number, that statement came out. So they've had another week since. So it's entirely possible that they've sold another million copies.
Another 30 million.
Yeah. Just out of nowhere. But I also think this is also a testament to Capcom, you know, adjusting the series for everyone. Whereas when, as Ellie said, you know, it sort of was a bit of a niche series to begin with. And it obviously did well for Capcom because, you know, this is what, the 17th Monster Hunter game? And I think now they've sort of realized they can get more people in if they, you know, not dumb things down, but they, you know, approach things in a different way to bring more people in, which they did that really well with World. That brought a lot more people in than had previously done. It is Monster Hunter World is Capcom's biggest selling game. So for them to do sort of something similar with Rise, I think this is just the start of them keeping it going.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how much of a meteoric rise this series has been on over the last just like, what, 5 or 6 years or something like that. I mean, it's always really been big on handhelds, but it's kind of interesting that once it finally released on, you know, two major home console platforms, it just absolutely exploded. I mean, it was released on the Wii and the Wii U. I had its own home platform iterations then, but, you know, on the Wii, I guess the audience wasn't big enough to sustain that kind of growth at that time. You know, it was much more of a casual console. You know, the hardcore interest had waned by that point. It was like 2009, 2010 or something like that was when Monster Hunter Tri came out for the Wii. And then it got a remake or whatever for the Wii U. And, you know, the Wii U just didn't have a big audience in general, but Monster Hunter Rise, it just exploded. But, you know, it had a steady build-up still on handheld platforms, you know, starting out... Well, no, it started out on PlayStation 2 and then went to PSP and then 3DS, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm pretty sure the Wii and Wii U games, so they were just ports of the of a DS release, weren't they, Ollie?
It was never on DS, was it?
It was on 3DS, so it was like the main series game. So Monster Hunter Tri was Monster Hunter 3. So that was like the main entry for that. And then it got ported to 3DS as Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, which was like the what they call the G release in Japanese, which is like something they've always done is like the super hard difficulty stuff that gets added onto it.
Right. And that was my entry point to the series because that's what I got with a black 3DS bundle and it came preloaded on the system. And I loved it. I thought it was great fun. But yeah, just... And I also think the way that the game has changed as well, especially going from a much more secluded sort of like, you know, you go into an environment and then you have to keep loading into these other small pockets constantly, you know, it makes it harder to chase monsters. Like, you know, when they leave one area and go into another, you have to keep loading and things like that. It makes it harder to track. But once, you know, World came out and just made things a lot more seamless, made more open, you know, became a real sandbox kind of thing, made connecting to people a lot easier because God knows connecting to anyone on a Nintendo, you know, service or something like that is like god awful at the best of times. But, you know, on the Switch, it's been actually a lot better, which has been interesting.
Yeah. The fact that you can really just well. Like go to your friends list and then select a friend and then join their lobby from that is honestly just like such a big thing because like even with like Monster Hunter World, like on the PS4, like that was not an easy experience just to like join a friend or something. You had to know, you know, what kind of hunt they were doing or you had to have their code. And it was just an absolute nightmare. I know that did change later on in when the Iceborne release came out, but like at launch, it was just an absolutely terrible experience. Go on.
and even on World, like you couldn't join people in their own like lobbies or whatever it is, like, you know, in their home base sort of area. You had to join them on the hunt itself. Whereas here, you can actually just join them like from your village. You just go straight in and you're there and you can talk and do things and work, you know, eat meals or manage your inventory and all those kinds of things. Like, It's how an online game should run.
And I like the idea that you can jump into a lobby and, you know, every part of the gameplay experience is exactly the same as it would be if you were playing single player, just, you know, with other people there. And I think that's the kind of multiplayer that we should be looking for in, like, other games that are sort of like this. It's like, you know, wandering around the village and you know, going shopping and stuff like that should be something that, you know, all of the players are in the lobby for. It shouldn't be like, you know, let's all get ready and then meet up afterwards, because it just sort of like has that big disconnect between, you know, preparing for a mission and actually doing a mission.
I think it also works to the game's credit that me being the resident, you know, ninty negative Nancy on this show, it also works to the game's credit.
Not even close.
Well, it works to the game's credit that, like, it seems to be that the best Monster Hunter Online experience is here on the Switch. You know, Monster Hunter World isn't the best one, as for some of the details that we outlined before. You know, there are other problems as well, but this is the most seamless and easiest for people to jump into.
And it's using Nintendo's new NEX online infrastructure. So, like, you know, the fact that it's the best online experience ever and it's on a Nintendo system using Nintendo infrastructure for its online is like something that I never thought that I'd be able to say about any series.
the fact that it's also brand new infrastructure. It's not Nintendo's had this for 12 months and this is the first third-party game. This is the first game ever, which is a big thing.
And Nintendo upgraded to Windows XP this time.
Oh, God. All right, let's switch gears and turn our direction towards E3. So E3 returns this year as an all-digital event, and Nintendo will be making an attendance this time. The online convention aims to bring together the video games industry's biggest names to make their annual announcements, as per usual. But the show was actually cancelled last year in 2020, if we remember, due to COVID-19. Whereas other online events such as the Summer Game Fest and IGN Summer Gaming took the opportunity to provide platforms for major announcements in E3 stead. And the Summer Game Fest will also return in 2021. And Luke also added a little note here to our run sheet saying that the PC gaming show and the future game show will also be returning as well. But as for the major players, the major console players going to E3 this year or being part of E3 this year, Microsoft will also be presenting Xbox as well as Nintendo with a Switch. However, Sony will not make an appearance again this year.
This is interesting news for two reasons. One is that for the past few years, everyone's sort of been focusing more on their own streaming things, like Nintendo do Treehouse Live from the show floor, Xbox run their show from the Microsoft Theater. So they've all had these other things they've been doing over the years, and the sort of physical presence has become a bit more muted because of it, because everyone's been able just to watch these things at home. So it'll be interesting to see how it all goes. Especially too, like with Steam, they've done it like three times now since this time last year sort of thing, where they've done the demo festivals where you can just jump on Steam and there's like 800 demos for games coming out, and I have to point out, this is not the first time something like this has happened. Xbox did it in 2007, and then 2008 they had demos from the show floor that you could download on your Xbox 360 and play them. So I wonder if something like that'll happen, is if, maybe a Halo Infinite demo or multiplayer demo will release with the Xbox press conference or something like that. It is good news, but it's also, as Angelo said, not that different for most people down here, just how they watch E3.
Being, in a digital-only event. Anyone else have some thoughts on this?
I will say, as somebody who does news coverage of E3, and game stuff in general, I am so glad that we're back to the E3 week stuff, because while there is some merit to spreading it out, and usually it's better times and I don't have to get up at 2 a.m every day for 5 days in a row, it was so exhausting last year to have a sort of vague 6 month window of anything could happen at any time. Tomorrow Ubisoft could announce that they're doing, a week-long stream of their stuff. And then, for that entire week-long stream, I have to, or one of us has to be ready to cover that if something comes up. And it's just, a really exhausting experience to have what would normally be compressed to, a week of high-energy announcements and all of this stuff, spread out over 6 months. It's just... it's not a fun experience. So having it back into a week, even though it is very tiring to actually cover everything. I think for my second E3 for Vooks, which I think was in 2018, I watched every single press conference from every single company. And I just didn't sleep for 3 days. I got an hour of sleep within those 3 days.
To be fair, it feels better, once you actually get to payday and you receive all those Vooks bucks, right? That makes everything better for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can only spend those Vooks bucks on emotes in the Discord, so...
yeah, that's right. We don't earn any money for anything we do Vooks related, by the way, guys. This is all done, as volunteers.
I was going to say, from my side, because I go to E3, so last year, similar to Ollie's point of view, last year was just utter torture. And this is coming from someone who has done, 15, 16-hour days at E3, then going back to the hotel room and writing for a couple of hours, and then going to bed, getting up, 4 or 5 hours of sleep, getting up, and then doing the same thing the next day. Stretching everything out with Jeff Keighley's, spotlight event, which wasn't really an event, it was just a banner for everything else, is not fun. It is not good, especially because if a company says, we're going to show off games, they don't tell you what's coming because they want you to watch. So if you watch it and then there's nothing for you to cover, you're like, that was 2 hours that I didn't need to be up for. So having everything in the 1 week is really good for that. I'm keen to see how I'm going to cover it with not actually being there, which is going to be weird.
And actually having a day job to have to go to as well.
No, I already have the time off.
Oh, okay.
I feel like we shouldn't end this without some egregious speculation about what Nintendo is going to present during E3.
Oh, easy. Oof. Metroid Prime 4, Mario Kart 13,
etc. Breath of the Wild 3, 4, and 5, right?
Yeah. Sure. They're going the Avatar route right there.
Look, I think, in terms of speculation, I think we'll definitely get a trailer for Breath of the Wild 2, whether or not it's coming this year or not. It'll happen. I think it will probably come this year. That's probably like my big controversial prediction there.
I think we're going to hear a lot more about Skyward Sword before we get more Breath of the Wild 2 content.
Look, I definitely think Breath of the Wild 2 was planned for this year.
Yeah, whether or not it'll actually come out is another story. But it, like, you know, they have intentions to release it this year. We'll see how that goes. But then, like, you know, what else can you need? Like, Bayonetta 3 hasn't been seen since, like, late 2018. Because that was, like, the Game Awards thing in 2019, wasn't it? So, like, that's been... I mean, 2018, yeah. So
it was 2018. Because 2019, like, Feb 2019 is when the two games hit Switch. The first two.
Yeah. So, it's been 3 years since we heard anything about Bayonetta 3. I think that's probably likely. What have Platinum really been doing lately?
I mean, they've announced and released like four other games since then, so.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Probably more stuff for Splatoon 3. I'm trying not to, like, get anyone's hopes up, because, like, if I make any wild prediction,
I'll do
like-
that. Here's my horrible hot takes that have zero foundation. Metroid Prime Trilogy. Who knows?
Oh, finally. F-Zero. Yeah.
Definitely not. And Super Mario Party 2/DLC.
Oh my god. I'd be up for a Captain Toad 2 or even a Mario Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle 2. I'd be down for that.
I mean, like, what I really want, like, and this isn't a prediction, this is just like what would make me really happy from Nintendo 3 E3 is a new style of 2D Mario. I don't want new Super Mario Brothers. I want a new 2D Mario that is, like, actually fresh and interesting and looks different from, you know, the prior six games that we've gotten out of them.
You're saying you want new Super Mario Brothers?
No. He wants old new Super new old
Super Mario.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, just new Mario, basically.
I'll be honest. Given Nintendo's track record last year, they were doing sort of announcements and then sort of 2 months later that the products were released. I think their E3 stuff this year will be, here's another trailer for Mario Golf, which is out like 2 weeks after it.
Yeah.
So like late June.
I'm hyped for Mario Golf. Looks
sick. And then we'll probably get like maybe a treehouse session for Skyward Sword just to show that off. But then I think everything else is going to be, you know, here's the stuff that's coming, you know, later this year. Whether it is Breath of the Wild, I don't know, but I don't think they're going to do anything too outrageous, because they've sort of established themselves in a bit of a pattern now where they're only sort of showing things off a few months before release. Skyward Sword being the exception, of course.
Hmm.
Obviously, like, the main one that we have to talk about is the Switch Pro, which is definitely going to make an appearance at E3, even though Nintendo has not shown off hardware at E3 since, what, 2005?
The Wii U, they did things for that.
It was announced beforehand, though, wasn't it? It was announced
in
May.
That was announced, like, almost a year beforehand, wasn't
it? Yeah, true. And then, well, I suppose the last big one was the
Cafe.
The 3DS was the last big handheld showcase they did, where they had the 800 women walk out with a 3DS attached to a belt.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, man, don't expect that.
we're around the 10-year mark, the 10-year anniversary mark of Project Cafe getting announced, actually, now that I think about it. We didn't do anything for that. Oh, well.
Because we were only just starting all out to go back to cafes.
Yeah, that's it. Pac-Man 99 was announced and released as a free download for Nintendo Online subscribers. It's the third retrofitted Battle Royale experience made available on the platform after games like Tetris 99 in 2019 and Super Mario Bros. Was it Super Mario Bros. 35? Did I get that wrong in the sheet? Yeah, Super Mario Bros. 35 late last year, which is now no longer available as of March 31, which was the day that Mario died. 99 players compete in a round of Pac-Man, eating up ghosts and sending them over to other players to mess up their day, basically. And the last player remaining wins. I haven't tried this game yet. I'm going to be honest. I didn't even play Super Mario Brothers
35 either. I didn't touch that game once. I downloaded it and never actually played it. So, you know, I'm bad. But you guys would have had a chance to play this game, right? Has anyone here played it?
I've played a few rounds.
Yeah, I've played it. I'm really bad at this game. I thought I was bad at like Tetris 99, but like over time I got better. With this one, I just like, no chance. I've always been like terrible at Pac-Man. It seems like a really simple game, but I just suck at it. So this is just absolutely not my thing. And it was like really frustrating.
It's a completely different skill set, right? So,
well, the other thing too is like, I was going to say the other thing, this is not standard Pac-Man. This is more Pac-Man Championship Edition. Sort of, they sort of redid in the mid-2000s for Xbox Live Arcade. So it's not just your standard Pac-Man game.
Well, what's the similarity there between Championship Edition apart from the conga line ghosts?
That's all that's I really associate it. With. It's just sort of the conga line. There's more, but that's the big thing.
Yeah, I love that, man. Championship Edition, the original one, came out like 2010 or something like that. I was all over that. That was like one of the very few games in my entire lifetime that I actually chased like online high scores and things like that. I loved that game so much. And I just haven't played it since back then. I should really get back onto it. Championship Edition rules.
Well, you should try out Pac-Man 99 because it's basically the same thing, but competing against other people.
And just neon effects.
It was extremely demoralizing. I played like my first few games and I was like, oh, you know, I got like 60th position in like the first game that I played, and then I got like 54th and then like 48th, and then like I saw like somebody else in our Discord like played three games and they got like 8th, 4th and then 1st, and I was like, well, all right, then I'm just gonna always be terrible at this game. it is fun, and I like the idea of like these classic arcade games being transferred into like this new subgenre, if we want to call it that, of like battle royale stuff. I think Tetris 99 was like a hugely clever idea.
I think it's a great way to bring back these old properties in a new way. I mean, obviously, if they just keep doing the same thing over and over again, we're just going to get tired of them. But I think it's a great way to bring them back rather than just making us pay for the same game again. I mean, what's even better is that we don't have to pay for the game specifically.
The one thing that's really sort of important for this one is it's also done by Akira Ko, who also, they were the guys that did Tetris 99 and Super Mario 35. So the same folks that made the two other games have also done this one. And they did it for Bandai Namco. So this is not a Nintendo game. It's exclusive to Nintendo Switch Online, but it's not made or published by Nintendo. It's all done by Bandai.
So I will say it has been funded by Nintendo and does use Nintendo's servers. So it's not like it's going to like show up on any other console.
No, I'm not suggesting that. But I'm just saying that it's, you know, it was a Bandai thing because it is the 40th anniversary this year of Pac-Man. And Bandai have been doing some unique marketing for that. There's a Pac-Man 40th anniversary theme song, which has a horrible, horrible video clip to go with it.
It's not Pac-Man Fever, is it?
No. Pac-Man Fever's good. This one is not good. I will find it later. But
Pac-Man Fever slaps. It's such a good song.
But they've got they're doing a lot more for Pac-Man for that reason. But the fact that they said, you know, they went back to these guys and said let's do this shows that they know, you know, the best sort of ways to bring the battle royale experience to maybe a game that you might not think would suit that theme.
Did Pac-Man really come out in 71? I thought it was a little later than that. No. What am I 81. Doing? That's 50 years ago. 81. Oh, my God.
Angelo, oh my God, no so good old. At math.
I'm so old. I'm not 40, but my gosh. I didn't even occur to me that it would be the 40th anniversary. Dang. Well, there we go. Well, going on, two of our main themes for this episode, Pac-Man 99 and Wild Speculation, let's put those two things together and go into our discussion topic about what are some other games that we would like to see get the 99 or Battle Royale treatment, a la Tetris 99. Who wants to go first?
So, here's a wild idea. I don't know if you guys will be on board, right? I don't know if this will work necessarily with 99. Perhaps bring it down to 35, some type of like Mario-esque type of theme, right? Some type of Mario game that they can have, but have it as some type of limited release so people can never play it again. I think it's a great idea.
I think that's perfect. Just and absolutely tell everyone when they can't play it as well, like 4 months ahead of time, so everyone knows that, you know, they'll never be able to touch that game or download it ever again, for sure.
Definitely. in all seriousness, no.
Okay.
Though.
Wait, you weren't being serious?
I wish I wasn't. If one game that I thought of, and Ollie's already told me he had this idea as well, so I'm sorry that I've grasped it from his mind, which I think would work incredibly well as a 99 game, is the WarioWare series. It's basically a game full of mini games, and it's having a whole lot of mini games through, and you're playing against 99 people. I'm not sure what else they could do to like spice that up in some 99 realm. Maybe as you win like a mini game, you can force somebody else to play like a slightly harder version of that game or something like that. But it's already a fun game to play, like with just really, really short little mini games to play. And doing that with a whole lot of other people, I think would be sweet.
I'm just now thinking of the poor guy's face when 99 people rock up to pluck nose hairs.
100%. So many.
Well, so the thing about the 99 games is like with Tetris and Pac-Man is that you send obstacles over to people, you know, in Tetris you send garbage, in this one you send other ghosts. So what would be the similar sort of gameplay hook with this one?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Like, I'm not sure what they could possibly do in that particular scenario.
Right.
Like in Mario as well, it was like obviously sending over enemies.
Yep.
Like in this one, like I said, the only thing I think of is like perhaps sending over like harder versions of like the game we just played. Or maybe losing time or something. Like I'm honestly not sure.
Actually, yeah, that might work. Like, you know, there's like a rotation. It's kind of, maybe it's sort of like Fall Guys where there's a rotation of like 15 stages or something like that. And you do like six as a game, like, you know, one game is like six different mini games, and, you know, you start off with 99 and then X amount mm-hmm. get knocked out, and then you get to the next one, X amount get knocked out to the one more standing at the end. Maybe that would work.
I'm not sure if you guys have played the WarioWare games before. I assume some of you have. The games do rotate through and they do get harder over time as you go through the levels. So the same game, it just, they either add a twist or reduce the time that you have available to do that task. So I think that'll at least be doable in that sense. Mm.
I'll go next. Mine that I would play in an absolute heartbeat would be Bomberman. I think Bomberman would be a great fit for a 99 battle royale slash thing where, like, you know, you're just working on your own grid. Maybe you've got a countdown timer of 30 seconds or something like that, and you're just working to get the timer to stay at 30 seconds as long as you can, or whatever it is, 15 seconds or something like that. And you're just constantly just trying to break your way through the grid, and then there's just more crap just coming down. You're just kind of trying to get rid of as much as possible. The more combos you get, the more rubbish you send over to other people and vice versa and stuff. I think that would work really quite well. And it could just be like the old school, like, you know, 1980s graphics. Doesn't have to be the 3D graphics or anything like that. Keep it simple and you can still see 98 other players on the screen. I would absolutely love that.
It'd even work like if you didn't have your own grid, like if you played like a 4-player grid or a 2-player grid. And then if one person or all three people get knocked out, other grids merge or whatever it is, I think that'll just make it even more insane.
That's a good point.
Isn't that like an actual game that was on Stadia and now it's coming to Switch? Isn't that like a Bomberman Battle Royale?
Is there?
I guess, yeah, there is.
I don't even know. I don't pay
attention. There totally is. I actually forgot that it existed.
Damn it.
Oh. Yes, that was announced recently that it would be coming to Switch. So,
oh, balls.
Good job, Angelo.
Damn it.
Predicted the past.
All I could think about the only Bomberman related stuff that I could think about that was coming out, that had come out or was in the news recently, was the Bomberman like tabletop game. And I would have loved that. That sounded great as well, but then that got canned like a month ago. Damn it. Thanks, Google.
All right. Well, I'll go next. I actually did want to do WarioWare, as Michael said. Sorry. In fact, that was the whole reason I suggested this segment, because I was like, oh man, I have the best suggestion that nobody else is going to come up with.
I had the same feeling with Bomberman.
So I did write down Mario Party as like a backup thing, but I'm actually going to change my answer, because Mario Party, I mean, it's basically the same as WarioWare, right? You do mini games and then, you know, whoever doesn't do the minigames well loses. But I'm actually going to change my answer to Clue Clue Land. Clue Clue Land is...
I should have seen this coming.
All right. So anyone who's been in the Discord for a while knows that Clue Clue Land is like my absolute favorite NES game. And, you know, it might be bold of me to say, but personally, I think it's the best NES game that exists, which is going to be controversial.
That's very bold.
But it's a really fantastic sort of puzzle action-y game that's sort of like Pac-Man. you know, you could send enemies to other players. You could, like, put extra coins in that they have to collect, because the whole point of Clue Clue Land is that you're uncovering hidden coins in between these pegs. And if you uncover all the coins, then you go to the next level. So what they could do is, you know, when somebody finishes a level and or kills, like, an enemy and then sends it to another player, it could add, you know, an extra coin in their map that they would have to uncover in order to get to the next level.
Sorry, just laughing. Sorry, I was using my phone because I didn't want to use my keyboard to get the tappy taps going. But I just tried to look up Clue Clue Land on my phone because I couldn't remember what it looked like. In my head, I had a Game Boy Advance game a completely different... I just had a completely different game in my head. I Google searched Clue Clue Land, thinking that it started with a K, so it was K-L-U.
Yeah, I knew this is where this was going to go. As soon as you said Google, I was like, oh, God. And
it actually auto-corrected to Clue Klux Land, not Clue Klux Klan. So, sorry, I was having a big laugh on my own over here. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Please go on.
But yeah, so Clue Clue Land, honestly, a really good game. It kind of got, like, spiritual successes on the GBA and DS in Donkey Kong King of Swing, which is also, like, really fantastic games, that I suppose could be a 99 game, but nobody really cares about King of Swing, apparently. but yeah, Clue Clue Land, that's my suggestion. I think it could be really fun, even though, again, nobody kind of cares about Clue Clue Land either. But it's a good game.
I think I'm thinking of a completely different game. There was in my head, I'm thinking that Clue Clue Land on the Game Boy Advance, because back in the day, back in, like, the early 2000s, I just played a bunch of GBA ROMs because I couldn't afford Game Boy Advance games at 13. But you're, like, this little peg thingy with, like, these rotating bits around it, and, like, you're kind of, like, floating. Is that not what Clue Clue Land is?
Oh, are you talking about Kirin?
Oh, maybe I am. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah,
is that what it's called?
Clue Clue Land is just, like, on a maze of grids, and then, like, the only way that you can change your direction is, like, by holding out one of your little character's arms. It's an NES game. It's good.
Okay. I think you're right.
I can't remember the name of that game either.
I think it is.
I think another game you're talking about.
I think it's, like, something like that, Kurikurin or something like that. That makes a little more sense, and why I spelt Clue Clue the completely wrong way in Google search. Hey everyone, Angelo jumping in from the edit room to say that yes, Michael was right. I was getting myself completely confused with a different Game Boy Advance game called Kurikurin, which, to be honest, I have not thought about since, like, 2002, but I've actually included it into this episode as the opening and closing music. So do enjoy that, and I do apologize again for completely derailing the conversation. Anyway, back to the show. Anyway, Luke, your turn.
Mine is a little different. Because in the chat when we started talking about this, I put in, like, Madden 99 and FIFA 99 just because they were sports games released that had 99 in the title. I'm going even probably a little more obscure for some people, but Minesweeper was sort of my first thought, because it's a very simple game mechanically, but it can be quite, you know, challenging at times, I suppose is the best way to put it, with you know, trying to determine which square you need to clear out next.
You need to assume that 99 people know how to play that game, though.
I mean, I'd be impressed if one person knew how to play Minesweeper. But the other thing, too, is even when Ollie was talking about it, you know, other games sort of jumped into my head. You know, like, there could be a Lemmings game, as, you know, Lemmings 99. And it's not going to happen, but Lynx Crossbow Training could be done. God. So any of the Nintendo Land type minigames.
I just had a great idea.
Could be done as a 99 type thing. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean old school and then more recent, so
I think desktop games would work pretty well. Be pretty good.
Yeah. I had a brainwave while we were talking. I think Bubble would be a great 99
game. Oh, dang, bro. That is a great idea. Why didn't anyone think of that?
Like, legitimately, I just had a brainwave to, like, just
you're just thinking now all the old school arcade levels. Games. So let's get Galaga 99, Centipede 99, Space Invaders 99.
But I mean, like, I was thinking something. Bubble has a whole lot of trash to collect and trash to send over. It's like the perfect, like, garbage collection send game.
That would be a really good idea. And Luke, yeah, I was along that mindset yesterday as well. I was thinking something like, you know, a shooter, like, you know, R-Type or something like that. But I just figured that there'd be too many moving parts with that one, that it might just not work, like, in an online sense for 99 people or something.
Any type maybe. Of bullet hell game.
Yeah.
Akaruga 99. Just make it more insane.
Bubble Bobble. No one thought of Bubble. That's a great idea. All right. Someone out there, pay millions of dollars to have the license to make these happen, please. And then give them out to...
Also to me for this idea. Thank you.
And then give them out to everyone for free on Nintendo Online. Okay. Let's get over to games that we're playing. Who would like to go first? What have people been playing lately? We haven't done this segment in a while.
I'll start off. I've actually been playing a game with a mate over the past couple of days called It Takes Two. I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
It's a new release, right?
Co-op game. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So you will know... I'm going to say something in a second. I hope you agree with me. So it's a game where you play a mother and father. It's made by the same studio that did A Way Out, which is another amazing co-op game. And I'm about 9 hours in. I don't know how much longer there is, but it feels like there's way more. I feel like the game is incredibly long. But I've never hated a character I'm playing so much in my life. The people you play, the mother and father, seem like genuinely awful people, and I only wish the worst outcome for them in this game.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can see where Michael's coming from with that. I will say the other thing is Dr. Hakim starts out as the most obnoxious and annoying character I've ever encountered in a game, but by the end of it, every time he appeared, it's like, yes, it's Dr. Hakim! Because...
So just so everyone knows, Dr. Hakim is a book in the game, the Book of Love, which has been tasked to try and bring these two people back together, back in love. And he is an eccentric... I don't know if he's Spanish or Mexican. He speaks some type of Spanish language. And he's very eccentric. And it's a wonderful character. And the characters you play hate him. So I love him because of that.
As the podcast resident South American, I love that you specified Spain and Mexico and not an entire continent that is below Mexico. But that's okay.
That's cool. You do you. That's
fine. Oh my God, I can't win. God damn it.
There are times when Dr. Hakim sounds German as well, so it's kind of just like vaguely European-esque.
Yeah, but it's a great game. If anyone wants to play like a co-op game with like a mate, it's an incredible experience. It has about 7 trillion genres in the game. It's touching on every single game type that I've ever seen. It's awesome. Yeah.
Bullet hell as well?
Not yet.
Well,
don't spoil it.
Cool. There's some things. But and there's also a hidden Ocarina of Time Easter egg in the game too.
Ooh. Oh, interesting.
Cool. Luke,
what are you?
Ollie.
All right. I mean, like, mine's just a quick one to go through. I've been playing Monster Hunter Rise. Because, you know, that's my life now. I just play Monster Hunter Rise. I've been doing the high rank stuff. Basically, I helped my sister through all of the low rank stuff, and now we're playing through the high rank stuff together. It's pretty fun. At high rank 6, it gets really, really difficult and just starts kicking your butt. So that's been a lot of fun. And probably going to finish that up pretty soon.
And Luke, your turn.
I've also been playing some Monster Hunter Rise, probably not as much as Ollie, but I've played some of it. I've also been ducking back into Cyberpunk, just trying to clear out some of the last, you know, get those last sort of achievements. And I've also been playing Evil Genius 2 World Domination, which is the follow-up to Evil Genius, which is sort of a strategy game where you have to manage your evil lair, your front, your global operations of criminalness. All the while trying to stay under the radar of the world's spies and agencies, and all the while growing even more. So, yeah.
Cool. I've still been playing Final Fantasy IX. People remember I started that game like late last year, October or something like that. I've been just going through this real slow trudge through the Final Fantasy series from Final Fantasy VII onwards. I say it's a trudge and not a binge because it's just taken me so long, and those games are a lot. I don't know, they feel like a lot, even though I've only been playing for like 30 hours or something. It just feels like a lot sometimes. But I'm in the tail end of it now. I'm just about to get up to disc 4, if that's even relevant at this point when it's on the Switch. But I'm looking forward to finally finishing that game. Loved it so much. I like it way better than 8. Like, I know that people love 8 a lot, but I don't know why. That game was total balls. It looks cool. The story was stupid. It just made no sense. And like a lot of the functionality in the game was just kind of backwards too. But 9 is just super simple, straightforward. You know what's going on. It's great. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to getting into 10 and again, having that all flipped and getting back into some more convoluted stuff. So we'll see how that goes. But I've also been dipping a little bit into Outriders, which has been fine. I'm a sucker for, you know, the first 20 hours or so of looter shooters. You know, I was like that with Borderlands. I was like that with Destiny and then The Division and now Outriders. And I'm sure I'll tap out by the time I finish the campaign and never return to it or something. But it's not too bad at the moment. Again, the story is kind of silly, but, you know.
You're playing it on Game Pass on Xbox?
I am, yeah. I'm playing it on Xbox at the moment. Playing as a Trickster, which is the class that is about to get nerfed. And I chose it specifically because it looked cool. And now they're you know, balancing it out a little more, which is a bit disappointing. But I've also been playing a little bit more of Dead Space on Twitch, which has been fun. Really enjoying that game. Just got to Chapter 8. I think there are 12, so sort of the home stretch at this point. Looking forward to finishing that one off as well and getting through the series because I've played 1 and 2, but I never played 3, so I'm looking forward to finally getting to 3. And if I have access to Extraction on something, maybe I'll try to play that one as well. But yeah, let's get into the Fortnite forecast to start moving into our second to last segment here, Fortnite forecast. We've got the releases between April 12th, so that's tomorrow, the day of release of this podcast, through to April 25, which is around the time that we'll be recording next. We have on April 15, Saga, Frontier Remastered, and Stitchy in Tookie Trouble. Two very contrasted titles right there. On April 22, we've got Atelier, Mysterious Trilogy, Deluxe Pack, and MotoGP 21. And on April 23, we have The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel 4.
Yeah.
None of these games mean anything to me.
I just want to say, with the Atelier Mysterious Trilogy pack, it's actually the three of the games. And each game's like, you know, 80 to 100 hours of content, depending on how deep you go in. And they're putting all three in one pack for like $100. Well, I think it's like 120 or something. But yeah, it's just a big collection of JRPGs.
I know that people love that, but I hear that and I'm just like, geez, no, sir. It's too much.
It also comes with all of the DLC and like each of the games have like multiple like extra episodes and costumes and stuff like that as well. So there is no wanting for content. It's probably like the most you know, value for money that you get on any Switch game. It's nuts.
My gosh. It is also important to note, you can all buy everything separately. They're just bundling it all together for some reason now. That's all it is.
Is the Mass Effect Remastered Trilogy or whatever it's called coming to Switch?
Do we know that? It is not announced because when they started it, they were unsure of platforms. The good news for that one is it is actually still being built on Unreal Engine 3. Then because there's a whole thing. I sat with the developers a couple of months back for that. But basically, they just decided to stick with Unreal 3 so they didn't have to try and rebuild things that people knew worked certain ways if they didn't have to. So it is entirely possible it will come over, but at this stage, there is no announcement.
Would be interesting.
I think it also went gold yesterday, from memory.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Our last segment. I'm going to handball this one over to Michael now. We're going to be doing a Nintendo 20 question. So, Michael, you're in charge.
Thank you. I'm not going to lie. I'm very nervous that I'm going to get something wrong in the question and screw you guys over. But let's go. So, 20 questions. Now, I'm going to give you guys an opportunity here. And it's up to you if you take it. Would you like a small hint at the start or not?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I think we'll skip it.
Remember this if you don't get it in the future.
I mean, I'm guessing the hint's going to be it was released on a Nintendo platform, which is not that helpful.
No, it wouldn't have been.
All right, so was this on a handheld console?
No.
Okay.
Was this game released before 2000?
No.
Okay. Yep. So it could be a Nintendo 64, a GameCube, or a Wii game.
Or a Wii U game.
Or Switch.
Was this game on a disc-based platform?
Yes.
Okay. So GameCube, Wii, or Wii U. Was this game before 2010?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So
we've got a 10-year stretch there. Okay. Easy.
Okay. Was this game... I want to know if it's on the Wii or the GameCube. So I'm going to split the disc. Was this game released on a mini-style disc?
No.
Okay, so that's Wii.
Okay.
I can tell Ollie's surprised because he knows how much of a GameCube fan I am.
Yeah, I was fully expecting it to be GameCube.
I love GameCube. It's definitely one of my favorite consoles.
All right, so it's a Wii game.
So that narrows it down to 1,597 games.
It also took 6 questions. Would
genre?
Yeah, I was going to ask
because the genre.
I was going to say, would it count as a casual game? But no, that's not.
I mean, I think we should
a useful question.
I think we should ask if it was like published by Nintendo. Because if it was published by Nintendo, that narrows our thing down a lot. Was this game published by Nintendo?
No.
Okay. So that rules out all Nintendo stuff.
Was this game made in Japan?
No.
Okay, so that's 8.
Okay.
See, my mind's now going to Red Steel or The Conduit.
For some reason, I thought of The Blob.
And that too.
I was just thinking, maybe it's, you know, oh, in that case, it's Europe or America. And then I thought, wait, but at that time we had Australian games.
Yeah.
This was the period of Australian development as well.
All right. So do we want to go for genre? Or do we want to? Because I think we can start doing things like, you know, was this, you know, does this game contain a main character or things like that?
Oh, actually, I want to find out something first. Is this a licensed game?
No.
Okay. Because there are a lot of licensed games on the Wii. So.
That is true.
Yeah. So not a licensed Wii game before 2010. Not made in Japan.
All right. Bit of a strange question. Was this game well received?
Yes.
Okay. So that brings it up to like 50 games worth talking about. Okay.
I want to know if it's got like a main playable character. So does this game contain, do you play as a main character in this game?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, means it's probably not Geometry Wars.
Can't be Zack and Wiki because you have Zack and Wiki.
Well, that was also made in Japan, so.
That's true. All right, let's start aiming towards genre then, because we're at 11 questions.
All right.
Oh, Jesus.
So what is a popular genre on the Switch that wasn't... I was going to say that wasn't made in Japan, doesn't make sense.
It had to be received well.
I don't think it would be a shooter. There weren't a whole lot of those.
Yeah, but the shooters were generally received pretty well. Like Red Steel 2 was received well. It didn't sell well, but it was received well.
Okay. Can you see the whole of the character, of the main character in this game?
Yes.
Okay. That's 12. So
it's probably not a first-person game.
So it rules out the Red Steels and all that sort of stuff. But I'm thinking maybe this is... I don't think there were any Western-developed RPGs on the Wii. None spring to mind anyway. Like, the biggest ones were, like, Xenoblade and... The Last Tower or whatever it was, you know, the Project Rainfall ones.
Yeah.
And they were all made in Japan, so.
I feel like this comes up a lot when we play this, but I think you guys should nail a genre.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. All right, so does this game have combat?
Oh, God. How would I answer that question?
Usually yes or no.
Once you know the game, you'll know it's not. Yes, I would say yes.
So So an easy way to ask this then, are you inflicting damage on someone else?
Yes, you can.
Okay. All right.
God, I hope that's right from memory. I'm not playing this game in so long.
Okay. So it's a game where you can inflict damage using combat. So that means it wouldn't be an action game of some sort because...
No, because that's pretty much implied.
That would be, yes.
It could be like a platformer, right? Because like...
You're jumping on stuff?
You can inflict, yeah. Should we just ask like outright genres? Because like...
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what has this... I mean, we could just ask if... What kind of genre do you think it might be? Or like what sort of genre you might want to...
I think it's probably either a platformer or an RPG.
Okay. Go for it.
All right. Is this a platformer?
Yes.
Okay. That's 14.
So I'm just double-checking this damage thing, by the way, for you guys.
Okay, so it's a platformer not made in Japan, which kind of narrows it down a fair bit. It's not licensed, was received fairly well.
Has a main character.
Look, I'm going to go back on the damage thing, because I'm trying to think back to when I'm playing on it, and I actually don't think you do damage.
All right, should we just erase that question then?
It's up to you. I'll give you guys that choice.
Let's just rescind it, because then we don't have to think about it again. We'll just leave that. So we'll get one question.
We have seven questions left.
Okay. So down to 13. All right. So it's a platformer, or at least has platforming elements in it.
I suppose the other question would be, is it a 2D or a 3D platformer?
Yep.
Yep.
Because that will define it. Is this game a 2D platformer?
Yes.
Okay. Because there were not a lot of 2D platformers, like traditional 2D, 2D. Mm-hmm. Especially not made in Japan.
Yeah, I'm completely blanking on them, to be honest.
Well, I'm thinking like Rayman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, but you definitely do damage in that one. Because you slap everyone away.
That also came out after 2010. That came out in 2011.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Origins, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
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 That was 2011.
It's definitely none of the Raving Rabbids because they're all...
No, because they're like party games.
Yeah, it's 3D. And there was also a lot of damage in that game because they screamed a lot.
They're not platformers either.
I'm starting to feel bad now. I thought I didn't pick a deep cut, but maybe I really have to pick a deep cut.
Fully expected to be this game that like only you've played and like nobody else has ever heard of.
Oh god. Okay. I feel like I need to give you this hint that you guys didn't ask for at the start. Because it can be slightly deceptive, which is why I wanted to give it to you. This game can definitely fit into more than one category. Okay. Or more than one. Yeah.
Okay.
I got that feeling somehow, yeah. Alright. Is there like a racing game that's sort of 2D with platforming elements? Is there a Sonic game that did that?
Well, I'm thinking it could be like a puzzle platformer, right?
Yeah.
Because those were a thing that existed. What puzzle platformers existed on the Wii is not something that I know.
Let's go to region. Maybe that'll help us out. Was this game developed in America? In North America?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so what are some other genre-based questions that we can ask then?
Hang on, never mind, that was 2013. I mean, we could ask about visual style. Was it like a cartoony visual, or was it like a 3D-ish sort of visual, like a realistic visual?
Okay, so we know it's a 2D perspective, but you're saying was the art 3D?
Because this like new Super Mario Brothers was like a 3D-ish sort of visual, and then Rayman was like 2D art. So
did this game have 3D art?
No.
Okay, so it's a 2D art then. So what are some 2D art? Muramasa?
Made in Japan. So
this was around the time the indie games would become prevalent. We could ask if it was an indie game. Was this an independently developed game?
No.
Son of a...
Okay.
Jeez, I was so sure about that
Jesus
one.
Jesus Christ.
Because WiiWare was pretty big at the time. All right. What about if it was an online distributed game?
Something that was like only available through the Wii Shop channel?
Yeah, through Wii U or WiiWare or something. Is that worth asking?
Feel free to hurry us up whenever you want, Michael, because we've been like floundering.
All right, it's fine. I feel like I've chosen a hard game and I've given you guys all the opportunity to do it, to live the dream.
Was this game part of a series?
No.
Okay, so it's a standalone. So what's that? That's 18 questions now.
Yeah. I mean...
So we've got one more.
I'll clarify something you just said. You said it was standalone. I wouldn't technically say it was standalone.
Oh, okay.
So
it's not technically standalone, but it's not part of a series.
So it could have released on other platforms, maybe?
Or a spin-off of a mainline series.
Was this game distributed via the Wii Shop?
Exclusively? Is that the question you're asking? Or what are you asking? Was it available on the Wii Shop?
That's an interesting.
Hold on, wait. Maybe I'm forgetting how the Wii works. Were disc based games available on the eShop? They weren't.
No.
Okay, then no, it was not. Sorry. Continue.
Oh, so you're saying that it wasn't available online? You couldn't buy it through the Wii Shop?
No.
Oh, dang. Okay.
Because that was all just virtual console or stuff made exclusively for the Wii through the digital channels. So if it's not there, I mean, it's not one of those weird exclusive ones.
I'm thinking like WiiWare, like something like a Lost Winds or Super Meat Boy or something.
Yeah.
So
you have one more question.
I don't know. Just publisher. No idea.
I'm actually like very surprised Luke doesn't know this. I assumed Luke would get this like immediately.
It wasn't an indie game, so it has to have a big publisher then. It has to be made by someone notable.
Yeah, like Activision. Yeah. I have a feeling it's going to be Activision.
But Activision didn't do a lot of 2D stuff.
Oh, no, maybe I'm like,
but that's
no,
too artistic.
I was just
Activision.
Thinking if I'm misleading you on the indie stuff, but no, I don't think this would be classified as indie. So, no.
Okay.
I'll ask you this. How would you guys define indie? Just so we're on the same page.
Also, so like at the time, I would classify an indie game to be like someone, like a small team with who would have signed with
a limited budget, right?
Yeah. And if it wasn't distributed on an online platform, it's unlikely to be indie in that case at that time. This was the time when indie gaming was just becoming a little more widespread.
I've just realized THQ was still alive back then in their old format.
Oh, no.
Because THQ failed.
But they were mostly licensed.
Like, yes, yeah, that's just what I felt because everything was almost licensed and sucked. All
right. I'm going to go with this and to say they're not indie. Like, I would not classify this studio as indie personally.
Okay.
That's fine.
Doesn't help us.
I don't know. It doesn't. I'm sorry.
Pick a publisher or a genre or something.
All right, one more question. I've got to put a time limit on this one. I feel like this is getting longer.
Yeah, let's just kill it. All right, let's pick a genre or a publisher.
Well, we know genre. It's a 2D platformer.
He said it straddles various categories, so I'm guessing that means genres.
Yeah, but I don't think a random guess is really going to narrow it down much. Because well,
we're not going to narrow it anyways. I think we've lost this one.
All right. I mean, the only thing I can think would be something from EA, but I don't know of any 2D games that they worked on.
All right. Was this published by EA?
No.
Okay. So there we go.
All right. Time for some guesses.
Can you put a 45-second... I'll put a 45-second counter on. Set a time of 45 seconds.
Okay. 45 seconds and counting.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Siri.
Great, now there's an AI overlord watching us. The only game that jumps to mind in that entire space is Rayman. Because everything else that I can think of is also licensed.
Yeah, I thought like maybe like... it doesn't fit though. Like Marvel Ultimate Alliance isn't a 2D thing.
No, they were isometric, but so they're also licensed. I honestly can't think of anything other than Rayman.
Yeah, I have no idea either.
I think we're just going to have to guess Rayman, even though it's like 100% going to be wrong.
I'll guess it. Is it Rayman Origins?
Okay. This game is released by Majesco Entertainment and developed by WayForward Technologies. This 2009 reimagining of the 1989 NES game, A Boy and His Blob, Trouble in Blobalonia. This remake is succinctly called A Boy and His Blob.
Oh, no. That's like the one that I could not, that I did not remember.
You guys, you said Blob at the start and I was like, oh God, this is going down really fast. You guys mentioned WayForward multiple times during that discussion. Oh, you're 100% right. It is a puzzle platformer.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Didn't Activision publish that here?
Potentially. I don't think so.
No, it doesn't look like it.
I never played A Boy and His Blob, but I knew about it and I had friends around me who did play it. I just never played it myself. I'm disappointed I didn't think of that game.
I'm You're very sorry. I feel so bad.
Played it recently.
No, that was
a did you actually?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I played it on PC like 6 months ago or so. Oh man, I should have gotten that. That's so devastating.
Nah, Michael, that was a good choice. That was completely on us.
It was a really good choice.
For not choosing that one, for not thinking of that one. I should have thought of that.
So yeah, the combat part, I definitely couldn't remember. Although now you can clarify, do you hit an enemy at any point? I don't think you do, do you?
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. From memory, it's purely just avoiding enemies or moving them out of the way.
Ziggurat, that's who it was. And Ziggurat were some of the old Activision guys because they also picked up the publishing rights for the old Majesco stuff, like Blood Rain. Right. That's why I had it. I'm like, hang on, that's Activision, isn't there? No.
I wouldn't have known anyways. I wasn't paying attention to that much detail.
I went straight to WayForward because WayForward, they're sort of like 2D masters.
Yeah, well, that's why I was thinking something like Shantae or something, but I didn't.
This is why I struggled on the indie side, right? Because I think a lot of the properties they put out are very indie-esque, but like realistically, they pump out a ton of games.
But WayForward technically would be an indie developer, but they're also generally published by other people.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? Like, so if they're published by... They were published by... they weren't published by Nintendo. What am I saying?
Yeah, so DuckTales was published by Capcom, which is not indie, but WayForward as a developer are an indie developer.
But even though they're an quote-unquote independent developer, they still have like a team of like dozens of people, right? At least at the time, there was at least 20 people
working
there.
They have a huge team, and they work on a ton of licensed properties. It's not what anyone, I think, in a normal sense would call an indie developer.
I think it's
an independent.
Yeah, it's right. They're an independent developer by today's standards. At the time, would they be classified? Like Bungie is an independent developer now, but if Bungie was by themselves back then, I don't think we would have classified them as an indie because someone like Jonathan Blow was an indie developer at the time.
I don't think if you ask anyone today if Bungie was an indie developer, they would say yes. And that's exactly the same as
Kojima Productions is like technically an indie developer, but like nobody's going to call Death Stranding an indie game.
That's it, because it's funded from an external source. It's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. That about wraps up this week's Bookcast. Be sure to visit the site www.books.net for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter at books.net, all spelled out, or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/booksdiscord. Ollie, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Trekobalt, Trekobalt.
And Luke, where can people find you?
They can find me over at maxigeek.com or on Twitter at renderman7.
And Michael?
I can find me at Twitter at subelement, SubElement.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mangello, that's MANJELL0. And over at Twitch at Mangello Show, no zeros in that one. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next fortnight. Bye-bye.